Good evening.
It is nighttime this time.
I like the nighttime.
Yes. Yeah, it's a whole lot more night during this time of year than, you know.
That's true.
The other half.
If we'd said it was dark out, it could be 4:30.
It could be, yeah. Yep.
That is quite true. And you know, even though it's dark, we're still going to talk about photosynthesis. I guess there are things still happen when it's dark, right?
Oh, absolutely it does. That's you know, plants are very busy. You know, because I'm such a geek, when I was in college and undergrad in the biology department, and my backpack had this big button. And it said, on the outside, it might look like I'm doing nothing, but at the cellular level, I'm really quite busy.
Oh, God.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah, it is. It's funny and it's true, and it doesn't make it less geeky. But
yeah, no.
And you know, that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's much cooler now to be geeky than it was then. I'm very envious of my children getting to grow up when, like, Marvel movies are cool and it's okay to be a dork and a programmer and, you know, the kids all chatting about their 3D printers.
Yep.
I mean, I you know, I just got locked in lockers, stuffed in lockers. That was...
And still do to this day.
I do. Yep. I do. Yes, I'm low man on in my own home, low man on the totem pole.
Well, yes, we're going to talk about photosynthesis part D.
Part two. Today. You know, we should have said part two at the beginning. I hope no one turned it off thinking that they had loaded an old episode.
No, hopefully they'll actually, you know, pay attention to the title.
Listen this far. And I don't know if you noticed, but one of our listeners did. I loaded the wrong episode last week to iTunes.
Oh, did you?
And I put the Instagram out there. It was last Monday, I think. Mm-hmm. And within 10 minutes, I get a message through Instagram. Hey, you reloaded last week's episode, not the new one. I was like, oh, no. So
you had one job to do.
I know. One job.
One job.
It's up. But
nice.
Apparently we have listeners that the moment that thing, you know, beeps on their phone, it's like, hey, there's a new Hopnology. They're all over it. So
nice.
That is much appreciated. It's good to know. And it was not either of our moms, by the way.
Oh, well, my mom doesn't know how to use the internet thing.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it was my mom.
All right. Well, it was one of our wonderful listeners. So speaking of our listeners, new patron, Dave. Thank you, Dave, for joining us as always.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Dave. And what else did I tell you? I have a little patron story.
Okay.
So one of our longtime listeners, Mark, you guys know Mark. He's been on the show a few times. Mark had someone asking him about plants the other day. And what does he do? He refers them to Julie and Sandy Ridge Farms.
Nice.
Our friends at Sandy Ridge. The Hopnology family. We call it a community, but let's just take it to the next level. The family looking out for each other.
We don't hate each other that much to call us a family.
That's fair.
I mean, I might like to spend the holidays with some of these people, so they're definitely not family.
Oh, my. It is a good thing none of our families listen to any of this. Mm-hmm. That is fair. But that was just such, it was so great. I spent some time talking to Mark the other day, and it was just so great to hear, you know, that these connections we've made, the love connections, are working for everyone.
Yep.
So that was great. And I think you mentioned to me that at Sandy Ridge, they expanded their greenhouse out and they're moving the sleepy plants in and getting ready for spring.
Yep. Yeah, they had a massive damage to a couple of their greenhouses from some storms a while back. And plus they were expanding. So if you don't follow them on Instagram, it's a lot going on there all the time. So you have to check them out.
Very cool. And if you're getting ready for planting in the spring, which is coming, if you're in North America, have to always say that.
Yeah.
And you need plants, you know where to go.
You better start thinking now.
Mm-hmm. And remember, Hopnology, 5% off if you scream it at them really loud.
Yep.
It's got to be loud, though. Otherwise, you only get like 2.5% off if you just kind of mumble it. It's got to be loud. You're welcome, Julie. All right, so shed some light on the darkness this evening.
Oh, yeah, you had to go there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was really bad.
I know it was.
So you're just going to just interrupt me with with really bad jokes and puns because you don't have anything else to add.
Right? Well, I was going to say that's the end of my contributions for this episode. I'm just going to go back to my beer here. Which, if anyone's curious, it's a Pink Dragon Wit from Broadbrook in Northern Connecticut.
And I am consuming a Well-Being Intentional IPA.
Very nice. I still am hunting those down near me. Cannot find Well-Being out here.
Mm-hmm. Anywho.
All right.
Yeah. So we talked, and by talked, I really mean more like ramble, about photosynthesis. I don't know. It was like a month ago, maybe?
Something like, yes, it was on Halloween. Well, we recorded it on Halloween, so it was probably early November when it published. Yeah.
So it's been about a month, and too much photosynthesis to fit in one episode. But when we last left the chloroplast, we were talking about that was good.
But okay.
Yeah. My mom says I'm cool. So
She's paid me a bit to agree with you here and there Okay, we'll get into the content now. Sorry, gang.
So, yeah, we talked about this crazy contraption called photosynthesis and the actual how does a plant take energy from light and turn it into growth? How does that work? And believe it or not, I walked us through it at as high a level as I could while still doing the whole topic justice. That says a lot about how complicated this process is. And in the past, you know, I've said multiple times that, you know, we know more about the surface of the moon than we know about plant physiology. And in a lot of cases, that's true, certainly when we talk about plant growth regulators. But photosynthesis is something we know very, very, very well and in depth because it's, well, frankly, it's the reason we're all alive. And life has sustained in its form on this planet for, you know, a billion years or so. So, kind of important, photosynthesis. You know, could take it, could leave it. Mm-hmm. Well, you could leave it, but you would be gone fairly quickly. This idea of a plant capturing light and using the energy from that light in combination with... It's got to have a feedstock. It's just photosynthesis isn't about, oh, yeah, plants take light and they turn it into food. No, that's magic. This is chemistry. So you need a feedstock, and that feedstock, carbon, right, for food is carbon dioxide. So it's sucking, you know, gases in from the atmosphere and using the energy from photosynthesis by harnessing those light photons, rearranging all those carbon atoms and turning it into sugar. In a nutshell, that's photosynthesis.
And to your point, science, as a leader into next week's episode, we will be talking magic, and it will be close-up magic that I'll be running. So
close-up magic?
Close-up magic, yes.
Okay. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
You wanted me to throw one-liners in. Here they come.
I did, yes.
Here they are. Uh-huh. Close-up magic.
Close-up magic. We talked briefly, though, about the fact that hops also consume oxygen. All plants consume oxygen. So photosynthesis is only half the story around how these plants basically fix energy and use energy. Photosynthesis part is about fixing sugar. We call it fixing carbon. Using that light energy in combination with carbon dioxide from the air, turning it into sugar. It's fixed it into a food source. Now we got to use it to grow. And that's called respiration, just like you and I do, where we take in oxygen and release carbon dioxide. So plants do the same thing. Generally, they're doing that at night, is usually their respiration period, which makes sense because during the day when the sun's up, you gotta, you know, they're also using oxygen, but they use less oxygen than they use CO2, so net-net, they're consuming more CO2 than they are oxygen. What we couldn't get into, and I kept saying, oh, you know, we'll get to this part in the first episode that we never got around to getting to. Does that make sense?
Total
sense. Mm-hmm. That we didn't get to was this machine of photosynthesis, it no stop, right? If light is out, if the sun is up, if there's a light source and those photons are hitting that plant, hitting the chlorophyll, setting off that whole chain reaction, the plant can't say, you know what, I'm good. I don't need any more. and it can go into a situation called photooxidation. And what that basically means is the chlorophyll and that whole photosystem is generating so much energy, more energy than the plant can fix carbon for whatever reason. So you've got a surplus of energy, and that energy just keeps building up and building up and building up, and bad things start to happen. When that happens, you go into this, the plant has to do something with that energy. What is it going to do? What ends up happening is it creates what we call reactive oxygen species, ROS. These are, you might have heard Nutrition World, you know, oxygen-free radicals, and that's what causes aging, and that's what causes cell destruction, these oxygen-free radicals. And an antioxidant scrubs those free oxygen radicals out of the system, right? Sort of like a vacuum to keep these radicals under control. Hmm. Well, plants have a really interesting way of dealing with these oxygen-free radicals. The primary reason that plants have other colored pigments is to make the photosystem less efficient. So it's almost like, kind of like deploying a bit of a sunscreen, so to speak. And hops, well, certainly most plants, but hops specifically here have quite a bit of carotenoids. And these carotenoids can be active in the same wavelengths that chlorophyll is. So you often see in some plants, like in the autumn, on deciduous trees, they turn color in the fall. Well, what the hell? What's that all about? Well, the plant, the tree, the shrub, whatever, is going dormant. It wants to go to sleep, so it's really not fixing as much carbon anymore. But yet the sunlight is still shining and still beating down on this thing. So that means that mechanism, that photosynthetic mechanism, is just going to keep churning out these oxygen-free radicals unless the plant does something to reduce its photosynthetic capabilities. And first thing it does is starts to degrade the chlorophyll that's in there. So the green goes away and you see reds and oranges and yellows start to creep up. These are the carotenoids and another class of components called anthocyanins that sort of move in and take over so that it's kind of protecting that system from being overrun by these oxygen-free radicals that are really just going to tear hell out of the place. Hmm. And it's you don't necessarily see it in hops. You don't see that color change, but there is a considerable amount of these carotenoid pigments sort of inside the cells, kind of floating alongside these chlorophyll molecules that are there to help kind of sop up all the free radical leakage that's gonna happen when these plants can't use all the energy that the system is creating. And I just wanted to mention that because I thought it was kind of cool.
That is very cool, because when you first started in with it saying that you want to create inefficiencies, I was trying to get a word in to say why the hell would you want to create inefficiencies, but that does make all the sense in the world. I will also throw in there, when you talked about ROSs and the reactive oxygen species, you know where my mind went.
Rodents of unusual size, right?
Yes, rodents of unusual size.
Yes. They're not ROUSs, they're okay. ROSs.
All right.
And just for funsies, reactive oxygen species, basically think about it. Oxygen is very reactive, right? We know that. I mean, just look at rust and how quickly iron reacts with oxygen just in the air and turns into iron oxide. To make it even more reactive, you sort of imbalance its electrical charge. It's usually negative-ish anyway, oxygen is, but, you know, reactive oxygen, you basically create a radical, which is a imbalanced negative electrical charge, making it even more reactive to the point where it will destroy all kinds of chemical bonds because it's so unstable and is looking for basically any dance partner it possibly can have. And it's willing to break up a perfectly good marriage in order to get in there and make itself feel good. So these compounds, antioxidants, anthocyanin is an antioxidant. It's a red, if a fruit, flower, anything has a red pigment that tends towards purple, that's an anthocyanin. If it's a red pigment that tends towards yellow and orange, those are usually carotenoids. And so like blueberries, cherries, apples, cranberries, those are all anthocyanins. Whereas like a tomato, pumpkins, that kind of stuff are carotenoids. Both are fantastic tools for plants to sop up all these reactive oxygen species and to intentionally make the photosystem less efficient so it doesn't burn itself out. Sort of like an out-of-control engine.
Okay.
Right? If you just turn that, you know, you get a high-performance engine and you just put the pedal to the metal and you let that sucker go, it's going to overheat and pretty much blow out. And the same thing will happen with a photosystem if you're not using as much energy as that photosystem is creating.
So you're enforcing balance.
Yep.
Yep. Man, Mother Nature's smart.
We call it homeostasis.
Oh, I've heard that before. Yes.
Right. This is all going somewhere. Trust me. Right. Mm-hmm. I can tell you stories about why I tied an onion to my belt, which was a style at the time.
It was the style at the time. Yes. Uh-huh. We'll see if anyone gets that. Let's
see
if anyone
knows that one. We can't bust heads like we used to. Now we just tell them long, pointless stories that don't go anywhere.
Should we talk about the weather a little? Because I think we're leaning that way now.
We probably, yeah, right? So we've got this this photosystem that is extremely potent and can actually, left unchecked, tear itself apart. In order to be efficient and to actually do what it needs to do, all of this activity that I've talked about, all of these electrons moving around, all of these molecules forming and breaking, all of the transfer of materials, raw materials that the plant's taking in order to do all this stuff, occurs in water. All of it. Even the break taking in carbon dioxide. So as the plant's bringing in CO2 from its leaves, it's really brings it in as a gas, and it's only a gas for a very short period before it dissolves into liquid, into water, inside of the in between the plant cells. This is really important because, you know, you've heard me say this in the past, that, you know, a very small deficit in optimal available water for the plant leads to a big yield reduction.
Sure.
And people are like, I don't get it. Why? Why does that happen? Yeah, I understand I don't have enough water, you know, or maybe less than the plant is, but how does that equal such a massive yield loss? Because the entire action of photosynthesis, and then likewise the consuming of the sugar from photosynthesis, which is respiration, all occurs in water. And if you don't have the right level of water in the plant, you set up this imbalance, right? This, where now we're outside of that homeostatic region. So right. Now the plant's going to do all kinds of crazy things in order to bring that into balance. So if it's only got so much water to use to go around, it's going to start doing things like, oh, let's reduce our vigor so that the water that we do have available can be used, maybe spread around a little more. Because the last thing I need to do is grow more biomass that's going to need more water when I don't have it to begin with.
Sure, sure. I mean, I think water, and honestly, I don't think photosynthesis, I think nutrient uptake in terms of yield reduction. So the fact that it's also part of the lifeblood, and I think really that's what it is, it's the blood. It's the lifeblood of the photosynthesis process as well in terms of moving everything around. It makes logical sense.
Yep. And the plant needs to evapotranspirate, right? Needs to get water, move water from its roots out through its leaves, through its stomata, also to help to cool the plant. These enzymes that are doing all this work in the photosynthetic mechanism have a very narrow range of functionality. and we're mostly concerned with the upper temperature limit. And the, I mean, you're really talking 32 to 36 C, somewhere around there, is the upper end of, let's say 36 C, just to give everybody a little gimme. Yeah, we're going to say mid, let's just say mid upper 30s Celsius, not freedom units. That's sort of the upper end of reliable enzyme function. And much like putting your hand on a dark car or on asphalt in the summertime, it's a lot hotter than the air temperature. And we've talked about that due to incident solar radiation, right? The infrared waves and the energy from the sun heating up a surface that it touches. So that leaf could be a lot warmer than the air temperature around it. So when I'm talking about 36 degrees Celsius, even let's go at the highest end that research shows us, which is 40 degrees Celsius. And you can do the calculations for those North Americans. The leaf is going to be potentially a lot warmer than the air is. On a very warm day when the air temperature is, let's say, 38 degrees Celsius, which is pretty warm, the inside of that leaf and that photosystem could potentially be much, much, much hotter. So how is the plant going to cool itself down? It's going to do that through evaporation. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have enough water available to cool yourself through evaporation, the internal temperature goes up, those enzymes become less efficient, and the photosystem just doesn't work. So we have a couple of things there. You know, you need the water there just to move the goop around, but you also have to have the water there in order to help cool the system. The other thing that's interesting about the water and leaf temperature as we put these things together is the solubility of carbon dioxide into water. And the solubility of carbon dioxide decreases as that temperature of the leaf on the inside increases because of the temperature of the water. All these things are coming together, which is, we can say, when we have very high heat, we have any kind of water deficit whatsoever, even though we've got great sunshine, your plant is probably going to start shutting down because it can't keep up with all of the energy the whole system is trying to use to do its thing. Bad things happen.
Well, sure.
Well, you say that, right? You're like, well, yeah, sure, right? But, yeah. I mean, you can just go on the Discord and people are like, oh, so that's why I see this. Or, oh, wait, why is it doing that again? Oh, see how all this stuff comes together? I'm just not making this shit up.
I don't know. I mean, it's. I go back to what I was putting on Instagram the other day with those third grade pictures of photosynthesis. You need sun. You need water. It all. I'm not trying to minimize it, but yeah. I mean, this is. It makes sense.
Right, and I'm linking these together because they all do go together. We can't talk about these variables independently.
It's a system.
It's a system. You kind of got to have all the pieces working.
Yeah.
Yeah. But water is extremely critical for all of those aspects, not just the fact that, oh, yeah, I know plants need water. And if I don't have enough water, it wilts, right? That's about all most people think about water. Mm-hmm. You brought up the fact about it being a solvent that carries nutrients, which is, pretty darn important. It's also the major cooling material, right, through evaporation. Mm-hmm. And if you have extremely high humidity, you know, assuming you're like relative humidity, that plant's not going to be able to cool itself as well. So you could have plants that, let's say, are in the high desert where, yeah, the daytime highs could be in the 90-some degree Fahrenheit range. But because it's very dry, plants can more effectively cool themselves through evapotranspiration than, let's say, a plant in south central Wisconsin on an 85 degree day with 90% relative humidity.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we've done at least one, if not two episodes, all about water.
Probably. We could probably do two more episodes about water.
We probably could.
Yeah. So that's how all that sort of fits together in a nice little package, why it's important. I wanted to say a couple more things here just about chlorophyll in general, and I want to try to link all this together, both these episodes, and talk about what this means for production.
Okay.
How this is impactful for some of these other systems. So chlorophyll itself, people think, oh, I just need light, right? I just need gotta have light on my plants, and they're gonna photosynthesize, blah blah blah. Well, actually, chlorophyll, there's chlorophyll A and chlorophyll B, because you know we gotta be difficult like that. And they really only, they'll absorb light within the entire visible spectrum, but they're mostly, the vast majority of chlorophyll A and B, they are 60 to 80% of their absorption range is in the blue to, yeah, let's say 420 to 480 nanometers. So that's in the blue light spectrum. So you mean if I put my hops under blue light, they'd be more photosynthetically efficient? Yes, they would be, because more of the photons are in that wavelength range than, let's say, the yellow or the red range. And you're like, well, wait a minute, plants are green. Don't they use green light? No, they're reflecting green light. That's why they look green. They're not using green light. They're using light other than green. Well, let's put it this way. If phytocyanin, which is another pigment that's in those plants that can capture energy, it's in the, it loves the 500 or 600, nanometer range. So that's like yellow orange light. And so it would love to absorb that stuff, but it's going to reflect, you know, blue and red light like crazy. So that leaf might look gray.
Huh.
Because it's not, it's reflecting those. It's not absorbing them. So, yeah, plants are green not because they like green light. It's because they like everything but green. Sure. So they're reflecting it. But I thought that was interesting. People, just one other point about photosynthesis that, yeah, it's not just light that plants need. It's a specific wavelength of light or a range. And if you're outside of those ranges, the photosynthetic ability is reduced.
So I'm going to ask a question about greenhouse stuff here.
Okay.
Trying to put together some of the things you just said, and this may be a stupid question, but you're kind of used to that. So just hold it back. So you just said something very interesting. It took you 30 minutes to get to it, but something interesting. And it was that they plants need a certain wavelength of light. So let me ask you this. When you're dealing with a greenhouse where you have that kind of control, can you use certain wavelengths of light in a way with reduced heat so that you've got a more efficient process and less need for evapotranspiration?
Yep. Absolutely.
So not a stupid question. Look at that.
And it is very frequently done. And our friends at Sandy Ridge, if we go there and we look at some of their production houses, and not necessarily for hops, but some other ones, you see blue-red LEDs. Mm-hmm. Because chlorophyll A and B also absorb pretty strongly in the red light range, so up around 700 nanometers. Not as good as they do at the blue end, but pretty darn good. And we also know that red and blue light also specifically affect different plant growth regulators, different plant hormones. Where if you have more red light versus blue light, you get different expressions of these hormones, and you want to make sure that those are balanced. But do you need those, you know, wavelengths 475 through 650? Meh, not really. So yeah, you could tune it and be able to cut out some of that energy that's, you know, not doing you any good.
Nice. So you mentioned not hops. Not sure. That they don't see that for hops. Now, last time I checked, it's a hops podcast. So yeah, why?
You could. You absolutely could. I don't. Okay. I said I don't know that they are.
Ah.
I know some. I've seen some greenhouses that are doing this. Right. That's what they have. Programmable wavelength LED greenhouse lights are stupid expensive.
Of course.
And you see them typically in very, very, very high value greenhouse production like marijuana. and even some other like pharmaceutical greenhouses or research greenhouses. But they've, as the price of these LEDs continues to drop, you see more and more of this happening. But yeah, you absolutely could do that. Okay. You could optimize your system for photosynthesis and potentially have even less energy go to leaf formation because you're giving that plant absolutely everything it needs with as few leaves as possible. Hmm. That leaves biomass and energy available for sidearm production and flowers.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Don't, and so, and then people are like, well, how much more? I'm going to put up a greenhouse and I'm going to be like, I don't know. It's going to be more efficient. Is it going to be cost effective? Yeah, probably not. So just stop. Just stop.
The sun is there for a reason.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Okay, as promised.
Production.
Let's pull this all together. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the impact of light and light quality on hop production, are we talking about yield? Are we talking about aroma? Are we talking about, what are we talking about? We're talking about mostly biomass, just overall plant growth, and alpha acids. Really? Why? Why alpha acids? And why not aroma? I don't know. But the data say, from numerous experiments, that if you have a reduction in, let's say, optimum light availability, the term is called photon flux density, the amount of energy actually hitting the plant surface. That could be from too much shading. That could be from a lot of fog. That could be from overcast. That could be from smoke in the air from wildfires. Anything that's cutting down on the number of photons that are striking the leaf surface is going to lead to a energy deficit and is going to thus cause biomass reductions as compared to, you know, an optimal system. It's not like your plants are actually going to shrink, but it's about having those compounds or that energy available to make all of these other compounds as well. Alpha and beta acids, for whatever reason, I don't know, and I haven't been able to dig into it to find out why yet, but there's been several studies done looking at the same variety grown in different locations under this. Basically, everything else being controlled for except for light, because it's just with the sun. And when we correlate the alpha acid levels to sunny versus cloudy days, we see an extremely strong correlation. And it's repeated time and time again. Even as little as 20% increase in like overcast skies from one season to the next is enough to have a remarkable impact, negative impact on alpha acid levels. So people will say, and I just had this conversation with a patron the other week or two ago, you know, hey, all things being equal, look at this. I had great fertilizer. I had all of my water I could want. You know, we didn't have any crazy heat swings or anything like that. But man, my alphas are really low this year in my Willamette compared to last year. I'm like, well, how many overcast days did you have? Oh, well, it rained a lot more this year than it did last year. I didn't have to irrigate as much. So my overall water application that I used, you know, was the same, but I said, but what? So then we look at the data, and it's like, you had 50% more overcast days this year than you did last
year.
Wow. Right? Hmm. And, you know, the Willamette alpha acid went from 5.7 to 3.9. Yield didn't change, mm-hmm. but alpha acid level did.
Wow. And that's not something you see on the vine.
Exactly. And so it leaves you scratching your head because, I mean, how many people, you know, you're like, well, they're outside, they're light. Look, they're growing. They look great. My yield didn't change. You know, that's just, there's probably some variability there, but you had 50% more overcast days. I don't know how overcast, but that's just what the data say is that overcast. That's enough to suppress your alpha acid levels almost 2 full percentage points.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so the natural question is, okay, if I have an overcast year, what can I do about it?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Zero. I mean, usually we've got some sort of, you know, thing, hey, if this happens, then try this. If this happens, then try that. But this is part of the variability that we are dealing with in a farming system. Year over year, can you see dips and peaks and valleys in your alpha acid levels? Absolutely. And it may have nothing to do with anything that's in your control. Period. Now, what about aroma content? We don't really see an impact of, you know, overcast or photon flux densities, we call it, on these aroma compounds. Now, granted, there isn't a detailed study on, you know, which molecules might be affected, just like sensory analysis. And we don't really see any statistically significant differences in those same varieties from an aroma flavor standpoint, just in the alpha acid, beta acid content. That's all I'm going to say about that.
So after all that, understanding all that, there's nothing to your point about control. That's frustrating.
It is. And so you take a look at that system and you say, okay, what factors, if you know that system is so important, what factors of this whole system can I control? I would say if you don't have control over your water, you're screwed. Period. Mm-hmm. There are so many people, even patrons, that have taken this for granted. And I just went through this with one of them, talking about their evapotranspiration calculations and saying, you know, it hasn't rained in 3 weeks and I'm only putting down this much a day. And I'm like, oh, you've got to be at 3 or 4x that. Well, I don't have that kind of water. Well, then you're going to deal with whatever it is that you're going to get.
Yeah.
But, blah. What else do you want me to say about that? I just don't, you know, when I say an acre of hop plants at a normal commercial density on a V trellis in July in South Central Wisconsin use 55,000 gallons of water a week, that's no joke.
So
you gotta have it.
So I think the moral of the story here is, you know, you gotta take what you can get in terms of your sunlight. Mm-hmm. But what is within your control is the damn water.
Yep.
And if you don't have your water lined up properly, then you're throwing away all the benefits of that sunlight.
And when we say all of this, coming back to water, all of this intricacies on photosystems and carbon fixation and biomass production and alpha acid levels, all of that hinges on available water, and which is why we see a small deficit in optimal plant available water equals pretty large reduction in yield. And this is kind of a window into why that might be. I'm just not making this shit up.